This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
By the Saints for a touchdown.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
Jimmy Graham brings it down, and that is a touchdown, New Orleans.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room, following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
And that is going to be a touchdown again. And guess who? Mike Thomas.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Hello, sports fans, who dat, and what is up? I am Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and co-host of this here podcast, Inside Black and Gold. I'm coming at you solo today, and we have a lot to go through. So I gave Steve the night off, but not really. He's hosting Sports Talk, and the timing just didn't work out. So we will have Steve back next episode. We're going to be going through a lot more from free agency, but I did want to catch you all up on all of the things that have happened Saints-related over the first few days of free agency. Now I'm recording this on Thursday around 4 p.m., and I'm telling you that because if something happens after 4 p.m., it won't be in here. So don't get mad at me if the Saints make three signings at 7 p.m. on Thursday, because there's nothing I can do about it. All right. And I only say this because we've gotten one-star ratings in the past because of stuff that happened after we recorded. Like, how would you not talk about this? Because that's just how the world works. Sometimes you have to record a podcast and people aren't ready for it. And so here we are. But we're going to go through it. Free agency technically started on Wednesday, but a lot of the moves started rolling in as early as Monday, because that was the legal tampering period. Now, the irony is there is still illegal tampering, which is just tampering, and it's what the Falcons and Eagles are being investigated for right now after the signings of Saquon Barkley and Kirk Cousins suspiciously early in the free agency period. It did not take long. It's kind of wild that you're able to hash out a four-year, $180 million contract within a couple hours of the legal tampering period opening. Almost as if you did something you weren't allowed to do. So that'll be fun to watch, because F the Falcons. But we're going to talk about that a little bit. But I'm going to spend more time talking about the Saints moves. And they have made a few. Emphasis on a few. Because they have not been exciting. And so we're going to get through all of the Saints moves and any Saints players who have gone elsewhere in the first segment. In the second segment, it's going to be our Let's Meet Willie Gay segment. Because we got to chat with Willie Gay on a Zoom call today. He had a lot of interesting things today. He's an interesting guy. You know, he kind of reminds me of Quan Alexander, and he is a self-described kind of juice boy, as Quan Alexander was. And I think, you know, when you look at it, that's kind of what you're trying to get back to if you're the Saints. And I don't think this defense ever fully replaced Quan as that kind of do-it-all linebacker who could play multiple positions and really be kind of an X factor in certain matchups, particularly in the ones where you have to go chase down a mobile quarterback. Because I think that's when you look at how he can impact this defense in ways that they desperately need it. His ability to spy the quarterback and go after him is a big one. So we're going to hear from his interview today. We're going to talk a little more about that. And then in the final segment, we'll kind of look forward, you know, which is the dangerous segment, because I'm going to talk about things that may have changed by the time you listen to this podcast, but we have to do it. So we're going to talk about a couple Saints players that are still free agents that I could come back, some Saints players who are visiting other teams, what to think about that, a couple players who have visited the Saints. And then, you know, just talk generally about the Saints strategy this offseason and why it seems even a little bit more boring than normal. But first things first, let's loop back around. What have the Saints done or not done so far? And we have four signings. One happened prior to the free agency period opening. He was a street free agent, so you're able to bring him in. And that's Xander Horvath. He's a fullback, not going to get anyone super excited. But the interesting thing about Xander is I just think he's a bit more versatile as a fullback than the other guy, the other fullback the Saints have re-signed, which is Adam Prentice. And now I think those guys are going to compete in camp. But I do think that in Clint Kubiak's offense, Xander's going to have the inside track. He'll probably keep Adam on the practice squad one way or the other. But I think you just want to get more versatile at the fullback position. And you also have with Xander, a guy who has worked with Derek Foster, the new Saints running backs coach, with the Chargers last season. So, you know, I think that's kind of the theme that you've seen with the players that have been brought in. You're not just bringing in players who you don't know. You're bringing in players that have either worked with a member of the staff or teammates of folks on the team or formerly coached by members of the staff, right? That's a pretty solid theme in the moves that have happened. So we mentioned that Xander Horvath, Adam Prentice, these are minimum deals. They're not mega significant. But the other two, so Willie Gay, who we talked about a little bit, it's a one-year deal worth a maximum of $5 million, not exactly breaking the bank there. I would expect the base of that to be around $3 million, right, with some incentives on the back end. So he really kind of made out clean there. That's a good deal for the Saints, especially this early in free agency. In a lot of instances, you'll see players, you know, if you're talking about a one-year, $3 million or whatever deal, you could have waited on that. He wanted to be here, and so I think that works out for the Saints, so you can kind of get that position that you kind of needed to figure out off the table and at a price point that you can very much stomach. The final signing as of right now that I can report to you, Nathan Peterman. He has been signed as the backup, most likely to the backup. We talked previously, you need a third string quarterback one way or the other in training camp, right? Like, it's not a situation where, you know, I've seen a lot of people looking at this and saying, wow, Jameis Winston left and we replaced Jameis Winston with Nathan Peterman. I don't look at it like that. I look at it almost like you're replacing last year's version of Jake Haener with Nathan Peterman. And by that, I mean the quarterback who doesn't play. The quarterback who's going to be on the practice squad is an emergency option. That's who you're replacing. Because I think that signing, what that signing tells you is, A, you're looking at a guy who's worked with Derek Carr previously, right? He was with the Raiders for two seasons, and he was Derek Carr's teammate. He has worked with new quarterbacks coach Andrew Janoco. Again, this is a theme. You got guys who have connections, right? So he can help. He's familiar with Derek Carr, and he's familiar with the quarterbacks coach, and you kind of bridge that a little bit, I think. Makes a lot of sense. Now, it doesn't mean that you're expecting him to play. In fact, I think that this signing is an indicator that the Saints are very hopeful that Jake Haener can go out there and win that backup job and be the trusted backup. That's what you should be thinking, because you traded up to get this guy in the fourth round last year. So I don't have an issue with that whatsoever. And you'll continue to go on that. But I do think that if you were trying to bring in somebody, if you didn't trust Jake Haener, if you were looking at Jake kind of in the Ian Book mold, you went into year two with Ian Book and you, I think, had already kind of given up on Ian Book, right? And I think if you were looking at Jake Haener in that mold, you would have gone after, I don't know, a Jimmy Garoppolo, somebody who had a bigger, who you trusted, like Andy Dalton, right? Like somebody who, if things went a certain way, you could see them taking over as the starter. That's not what you're doing with Nathan Peterman, right? If you get into a situation where Nathan Peterman is taking reps, meaningful reps, you know, not just like, oh, someone went down with injury and went in, then it's over, right? We don't have to talk about it. Disaster has struck. Like, it's over. So that's not what you're bringing in Nathan Peterman for. You're bringing Nathan Peterman to be a bridge between Derek Carr, Andre Janoco, and kind of the new coaching staff, the new regime. And he's a veteran guy who can help, right? Like, he can work with the quarterbacks, and he's just a valuable guy to have in a room, a six-year veteran who can do that. So don't overreact to the Nathan Peterman name. I think that it's, again, it's more indicative of that you are confident in Jake Haener and his ability to own that backup job than anything else. So feel good about that. Now, those are the four signings. More has happened aside from that. The first two things being, okay, Michael Thomas and Jameis Winston are your post-June 1 cuts, as we expected. Marcus May has been released, as we expected. So all three of those moves went the way you thought they would. And then there have been a handful of players that, some that you probably did want to bring back, some that you probably didn't necessarily make much of an effort to bring back. Jameis Winston signed as the backup to Deshaun Watson. So good luck. I love me some Jameis. I hope that he finds his role there. And hey, I hope he gets a chance to start. You know, it's kind of funny because one of the reasons that it didn't make sense for him to come back was, hey, I want to be a starter. And he's not getting that opportunity here. The only chance he could be a starter here would be Derek Carr gets hurt. But even then, I think that this team was ready to give Jake Haener that opportunity. So even in that sense, I don't think it would have made a lot of sense for him to come back. That said, going to Cleveland isn't exactly a winning scenario for that either. But, and this is a big but, what has Deshaun Watson showed you other than the fact that he has a fully guaranteed contract that makes you feel like he has a firm grasp on that job if he were to, say, get hurt and Jameis were to come in and lead that team to the playoffs, kind of like Joe Flacco did, but as a non-37-year-old old dude, right? So, like, in the sense that I think he has a better chance to get meaningful reps, that's a good spot for him. So, you know, I'm rooting for him. Good luck in the cold. Buy a jacket. I know he's a Florida guy, so he's going to be miserable, but he at least get that experience out in the cold 2 years ago with the against the Browns in that nightmare hellscape of a game. Beyond that, you've also seen Zach Bond sign with the Eagles. You've seen Lonnie Johnson Jr. sign with the Texans, go back to the Texans. He was with the Texans previously, and he kind of tweeted like, hey, I just wanted a second run. He really likes it there. And then Malcolm Roach is going out to Denver to rejoin Sean Payton. And I can say that Zach Bond and Malcolm Roach are both guys that the Saints were interested in bringing back at their price, right? Like, these are guys who you were willing to pay, but you were willing to pay what made sense. And both of those guys, I think, got more money on the open market than you were willing to shell out. And I think that's, again, we've talked about this. I don't know how many times I have to say it. We've talked about this. The Saints set a price. They set what they're willing to pay. They hand it to you, and they say, go see what you can get. And if this you come back to this, great. If not, good luck, right? And I get why that's annoying to people, and I get why people can get impatient with that. But that's what you're looking at, and that's what you're doing. And for Zach, I always kind of felt like it was going to be less about the money and more about the vision that a team had for him. Because if I'm Zach Bond, I am eternally frustrated with the situation I was put into, not because I didn't get an opportunity, but because I never got an opportunity to do what I do the best, which is rush the passer. And you saw that when he was allowed to rush the passer, he impacted games. He had a role. His presence on the roster made sense. So with that in mind, great. Good for him. Hopefully he can make an impact out in Philadelphia. I do question Philadelphia's like player development, because it just seems like they just grab people off of the rosters and say, you're good, let's take you. Oh, you're good, let's take you. They also signed Saquon Barkley, right? So it's just a strange, you know, like they went for DeAndre Swift last year. That didn't, they, 1 year, he had a good year, and then they cut bait. CJ Gardner-Johnson, they traded for him, cut bait. He went to the Lions. They re-signed him this year. CJ had to walk back all of his I hate Philly tweets, right? Because you know CJ's the type of guy who whenever he leaves a city, he's going to talk shit about that city, even if he doesn't mean it. And now he's back. He'd have to do the same thing for New Orleans if he ever came back to New Orleans. But yeah, Philadelphia confuses the hell out of me. But all right. So those are the moves, right? Nothing particularly surprising, but you know, it does make for some needs, right? I thought Malcolm Roach was an interesting one. I thought, you know, this is a guy who the Saints probably would have been interested in bringing back. He's a very good run defender, but you look at it and say, okay, you have Brian Brzee, Nathan Shepard, Colin Saunders, guys that you either drafted in the first round or are paying reasonable contracts to the point that these are players. These are not guys who you're going to bump down on the rotation. So how much is reasonable to pay your DT4, right? Whatever it is. Like if you're ranking, that's not really how you roll out the defensive tackle position. But if you had a depth chart of just defensive tackle, he would probably be the fourth guy on it. He'd probably back up Colin Saunders, right? Or in a really run-heavy situation, you might throw him in with Colin Saunders. But either way, it's only so many reps, so many snaps. So you can only afford to pay that guy so much. And, you know, it makes sense. He goes and rejoins Sean Payton. Remember, Malcolm Roach was a UDFA who joined the team. I want to say it was in 2020 with Sean Payton as the head coach. So there is a connection there. It does make sense for him to do that. So with all that said, yeah, that is kind of where you are at. And those are the official deals. The Saints have some other opportunities. They can bring in some other guys, obviously. The one other thing that happened since last week that is very notable, and I probably should have hit it earlier in this podcast, but I got out of order here. Ryan Ramczyk has reworked his contract. I think this happened on Tuesday. And why is that significant? Well, that is now the third contract on the books this season where a veteran player that you could have just restructured, right? Ryan, DeMario Davis, Tyrann Mathieu, there was significant cap savings in 2024 that you could have taken advantage of simply by restructuring those players. But as we know, anyone who pays attention to the Saints salary cap, and I get in arguments with people every year where they're like, oh, you just don't get it. And I go, no, I get it. You don't get it. Like, trust me, I know way more about this than I actually ever wanted to. The issue is not that I don't get it. The issue is that you don't get it, at least not to the level to say like anything beyond the same thing you've said to me every year for the last 5 years. At one point, someone was like, oh, they're in cap hell. And so I did a search to see, you know, how long has this one person been saying the Saints are in cap hell? And I got a tweet from like 2018. The Saints have been in cap hell since 2018. And this is a Falcons person. You know what the Falcons haven't done since 2018? Have a winning record. Like we talked, like, oh, the Saints only went 9-8. The Falcons have not won more than seven games since the 2017 season. And they are the first set of fans who were going to run out the door screaming, cap hell, cap hell. Well, if the alternative is what they've done, if the alternative is paying a 36-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles tear, $180 million, $100 million guaranteed, then what are we talking about? What are we talking about here? Anyway, so what Ryan Ramczyk did was not restructure. What Tyrann Mathieu and DeMario Davis did was not restructure. Tyrann Mathieu and DeMario Davis extended their deals 1 year. And in doing so, it took a little less money. You shaved a little money off the top. You guaranteed a bit more on the back end. So the players got their money to a certain extent. And you were also able to save more against the cap than you would have with a typical restructure, which would have really just pushed the cap it down the road. This one is a little bit more holistic, and I think is indicative of the approach they've been taking. Ryan Ramczyk's deal is even different than that, in that they didn't extend Ryan Ramczyk. They actually shaved his contract down to the base for this season, pushed out some of those guarantees and attached them to incentives that can be earned back in 2025 and beyond. Now, offensive linemen, there's really no statistics. You know, like it's not dissimilar to Michael Thomas's contract last year, where he could have earned a lot of his money back through incentives if he caught 100 passes, if he caught 1,000 yards. You can do that with wide receivers because there are stats. With offensive linemen, there's no real stats, or at least not any that are kind of concrete and accepted as this is an objective offensive line stat. Really, all you can look at is availability, Pro Bowl, All Pro. It's kind of all you can standardize. So realistically, his 2025 contract, if he's available to play, if he gets through 2024 and his knee is not an issue, which I think the Saints are more confident now. It's what Dennis Allen said at the combine. They're more confident now than they were back at the end of last season. If he can come back and play well in 2024, and he's available for 2025, great. That's a win. If he's not, then the Saints have been able to protect themselves to some extent in terms of the burden that his cap hit will have on them in future seasons. Now, the numbers, I'm not going to throw all the numbers at you. But what that move did, now keep in mind, if they had just restructured that deal and done kind of the standard restructure, you would only have been able to save about $11 million. With the reworked deal, the Saints were able to clear $14 million against the cap this season, which is significant because they had just cleared the cap about $1 million after the DeMario Davis deal restructure. So they went into the first day of free agency with $15 million in cap space. And now that's going to be cut against, you know, the Willie Gay deal, some of these veteran contracts, these minimum contracts. But that's a lot of workable space when you consider they have still not touched the contracts for Alvin Kamara or Taysom Hill. And then you'll end up freeing some more space based on what you do down the line. You'll free up an extra million post June 1 when Jameis comes off the books, et cetera, if you trade Marshawn post June 1, you'll clear a little bit more off the books. You obviously have to sign your draft picks, but that's a workable amount of space to get done what you need to get done, especially playing in the shallow end of the pool the way the Saints have for obvious reasons this offseason. But, you know, you hear all year, how are they possibly going to get around this? How are they possibly going to work through this? Well, one of the ways they were able to do that this year was, you know, I hear a lot about the culture and how the Dennis Allen culture is not the same as the Sean Payton culture. And guys aren't willing to do the same things that they were when Sean was here, and the confidence isn't there. Well, you saw three team leaders, veterans this offseason take team-friendly deals and shave a little bit more of their own compensation off to help the team. You know, that's not a negative thing. And it did help this team clear $87 million in cap overages without sweating much at all. And so, like, we could talk about cap hell. I have no issue with the Saints committing to Tyrann Mathieu, DeMario Davis, and Cam Jordan beyond this season. And they didn't have to commit to Ryan Ramczyk beyond this season any more than they had previously, and we're still able to save that cap space. So I guess call it what you want. The Saints are able to manage their cap in ways that allows you to retain your players. And that's the difference, right? That's the biggest difference between how the Saints operate and how a team like the Bills operate. Because you don't have to cut all of your players. You're doing that because you are unwilling to do things differently, right? And teams like the Chargers, who kind of go all in for one season, that's a different scenario. That's why they're cutting Mike Williams and these guys, you know, because they didn't. You have to manage this over a multi-year window and have a plan for how you're going to do it. And if you don't do that, yeah, you end up here where you fired your head coach and you have to reset. And that's a problem. And you can make the argument that it means that maybe you'll hang on to a coach longer or players longer than maybe you should. But I would say that typically impatience is not a good thing in the NFL. And so if all you've done is create a barrier that forces you to exercise patience, it's not a bad thing. And it's certainly not worse than going 7-10 for three straight years and firing your head coach, doing everything the right way. So we'll see. But we're still early on in free agency. Saints have several more moves to make, several positions in need. Again, we'll go through that in the back end. This next segment, we're going to talk a lot about Willie Gay. Play you a good chunk of that interview from today. Talked to reporters on Zoom. I was on that call. Asked him a couple questions. He had a couple interesting answers that I want to go over. So we'll be right back with that. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. You can follow the show at Saints_Pod. Who dat? We will be right back. And we're back on Inside a Black and Gold Free Agency Edition. That was a weird. I don't know why I did that. It did not sound the way as tough as I thought it would. We need Steve for that. Steve's got like the promoter voice that I will never have with my, you know, nasally whatever. But hey, we're going to get through it. And in this segment, we're going to say we'll call this segment the Meet Willie Gay segment, because that's really what we did today. Is we were all able to have, the reporters at least were able to have a conversation with Willie Gay. And, you know, he didn't say legendary at all, as far as I can recall. But he did strike me very similarly to Kwon Alexander in the way that he he kind of approaches the game. He's a juice guy, as he, you know, Tyron would say that about him, right? And if you recall, the nickname for the linebacker core when it was Quan and Demario was the Juice Boys, right? So maybe we can get back to that Juice Boys situation. But Saints brought in Willie Gay on a one-year, $5 million maximum contract. He is now the fourth former Chief that is under contract, along with Tyron Matthew, Colin Saunders, Tano Passanio. So a lot of T's and a lot of K's, and then Willie. And if they bring back Ugo Amadi, you will have another former Chief. If they bring back Jonathan Abram, you will have another of Willie Gay's Mississippi State teammates, and Todd Grantham, who was a coach at Mississippi State when Willie was there. So there was a lot involved in why he decided to come to the Saints. It developed late in the game, but that was not for nothing. He's going to talk about that. He'll also talk about spying the quarterback, and it's something that he's done very well throughout his career. It's something that he thrives at and likes to do. He says the easiest part of the game. So that's part of the interview that I want to draw your attention to. We'll talk about that on the back end. And also just, what is his role going to be? We'll discuss that. But without further ado, here is that interview, or at least a large majority of that interview, with a few things cut down or trimmed out.
What went into your decision-making process to sign with the Saints?
I mean, the best part is that, man, it's a great team, in my opinion. You know, defense always looking good. So, and then you have my guy Todd Grantham over there. He's a D-line coach. Tyron Matthew, Colin Saunders, Jonathan Abram, my college teammate, TK. He was there with the Chiefs with me my rookie year. So I got guys that I've known over the past 4 years that's there, so they can tell me all the good things about the city, about the team. And that really played a big role, man, having people over there that knew me already that could vouch for me if need be. So I'm looking forward to just getting over there with those guys.
You know, how do you feel about your fit with the defense?
Feel pretty good about it, man. They have two great linebackers right now. Of course, Pete, man, and you're going into year four. He's been playing amazing. I've been watching Pete since we both was young Bucks. I was in year two. I think he was in, his rookie year. And of course, Demario, man, Mississippi guy, Brandon Mississippi, man. I've been watching Demario since eighth grade. So just to be able to be on the field with those guys whenever, definitely, I got to earn my stripes, whatever position there may be, however many reps it may be, man. I just want to go out there and work for it. But I'm excited for the opportunity to even just have a chance, to be on the team with a great defense, a great defensive scheme like this one.
I think Tyron kind of called a hype guy. Now, this team has a lot of guys who have a lot of juice with them. Do you fit with that kind of culture?
Yeah, man, I'm going to turn it up a notch for you for sure. I know everyone got that hype guy, but I'm the juice man for a reason, baby. So we're gonna see.
Hey, Willie, when it comes to your game for, fans that might not be super familiar and everything with you having played in Kansas City, what do you feel like is the thing about your game that you're most excited to bring to the New Orleans Saints defense?
Man, honestly, it's nothing on the field I can't do. Not a perfect player. I never say that. But when I'm out there, I feel like I'm the fastest out there. I can cover. I can tackle. Do I make all of them? No. Am I going to make every interception? No. Am I going to make every play? No. But you got a guy that's going to go 110 every play, give it his all, but it's blitz and coverage. I feel like, man, I can do it all, man. And to be here and have an opportunity to showcase that, something I'm definitely looking forward to from OTAs to training camp and on into the season. So I can't wait to put it on display.
Hey, Willie, you played a role in Kansas City of trying to stop mobile quarterbacks and being a spy on them. Just what goes into that and what makes you really effective at it?
Man, that's just like playing backyard football. When Coach Spags at the Chiefs, man, brought that package up to me, 3 years ago? My second year. And I was like, yeah, that's easy, So it was very effective for us over there, man. And I'm looking forward to bringing it, to the Saints in any way that I can, any way the defensive coaches want to use me. Like I said, man, I'm ready. I'm ready to be that weapon that they, can count on. And, if it comes to mobile quarterbacks, I'll definitely do the job. So definitely not worried about anybody outrunning me. So
Willie, something you tweeted the other day, I just thought it was interesting. You're talking about, you might not have had the snaps that you would have hoped for, and like momentum in a game is real. I'm just curious if you could elaborate on, what you mean by that. Do you kind of feel like you maybe were not emphasized in a role that showed you in the best way? I'm just curious what all you meant there.
I mean, honestly, I have to dig into it, man. I went from my year three, you know, a year where I missed four games, but still was able to, I was 12 tackles away from 100, you know, so I played a lot, you know. Then the year after that, you know, we brought in a linebacker, you know, it was part of the game, you know. There was nothing to that, but like my snap count went down to the point where I was looking at the sheets every week after the games. I'm playing at most 26 plays, you know, in a 60-play game. And it's like, how many plays can you actually make? You know, you go in for a drive, you come out a drive. You go in for a drive, you come out a drive. Like, anybody who, you know, knows anything about rhythm, man, it's, like I said in my tweet, it's a real thing, especially in a football game or any sport. And to not ever really just get a feel for the game, for the flow of the game, man, it sucks, I'll be honest, you know. So that's kind of what I meant by that.
What role are you hoping to have on this defense?
Any role they want me to have, man, I'm just going to go in. It's a clean slate for me, I feel, you know. They know what I can do, but they are also hoping I show them more, you know. So I get that opportunity, and I'm thankful for that. So I'm looking to go in and, man, showcasing my talent, show that I can come off the edge, blitz through the middle, cover a man, you know, cover any back, any tight end in man coverage. You know, am I the best? Once again, no. But ain't no slacking, you know, when you put me out there. So definitely ready to show my skill set, man, to the best way that I can. So,
Willie, when it comes to wanting those snaps and that chance to play, I mean, obviously – DeMario and Pete both have been every down linebackers here. I mean, do they have a vision where they can use all three of you at once, or you think you'll be competing for snaps with those guys?
I mean, of course we'll be competing for snaps, man. You know, like I said, it happened to me last year, you know, in my fourth year of my contract, you know, not to take food off anybody else's plate, or, you know, but you definitely want to just get in, man, and get to the point where you're playing, shoot, me personally, more than I was last year, you know. And I actually want to get out there, man, and be able to show what I can do, you know, any way that's possible, man. And hopefully they keep us with us three on the field. I honestly feel like we had a good room with the Chiefs, but golly, man, with DeMario and Pete, I feel like we can make something happen, man. I'm excited to get those guys for sure.
And when you talk about being able to spy quarterbacks, that'll be music to fans' ears down here. That's been a little bit of an issue. What's the art to being able to handle the mobile quarterbacks in this league or match up with them?
Man, the art to it. You know, we used to play a game called Scared to Pick It Up, man, when I was young. And, you know, anybody picked the ball up, they run all over the field like chickens with their head cut off. And I'm the one that always go track them down and get the ball out their hands. So, and I feel like that's kind of how I look at it. You know, you have no specific assignment other than watch the quarterback. If he escapes, go get him. You ain't got to look backwards. You don't have to drop. You have one assignment. Go ahead, hunt the quarterback. You know, that's the easiest thing to do for a guy like me. I love to run sideline to sideline anyway. So if you just tell him to float over the ball, and if he tries to escape, go get him. Oh, man, it's going to be a good day.
And, Willie, you talked about, you know, obviously the former teammates you have here in Tyron, Tano, Colin. You know, I'm just curious if you've had conversations with them since signing, and, you know, what maybe, or prior to signing even, and what they relayed about this defense. Because it's interesting, it's four teammates, but also all on the defensive side of the ball.
I didn't really talk to them much because, honestly, I really didn't know where I was going to end up until the last few minutes of that day. But I did talk to Colin a little bit. Colin Saunders, obviously, because I was last with him with the Chiefs. And he told me how much he loved it over there, the defense, the city, how much the people love their team, their players, man. That's a big deal for me, man. So that's really all we really got into. But, yeah, well, I talked to those guys a little bit after the fact, but before not too much.
What do you mean that it came down to the last minute? Like, did the Saints kind of emerge late in the process, or could you kind of expand on that?
I mean, I had a couple teams, man, but we just was trying to work out the business part of it. You know how it goes.
Willie, what's it been like for you winning the Super Bowl in overtime all the way until now?
Oh, man, I'm a two-time world champion, you know. Started two Super Bowls, played in, you know, went to three. It's been a great feeling, man. I definitely want to bring one to New Orleans, though. And I think we got a great opportunity, great chance to do that with a wonderful team. You know, it starts now, though. It starts with the preparation from day one.
Is there anything that, like, you know, Tyron's kind of been like a leader a lot of places throughout his career. Is there anything that you've kind of taken from him that's helped you with your game, your development, your growth as a player, anything like that?
He never has a bad day. Like, meaning he never has a day of practice where he's a little slow or a little off mentally, you know. And I've been watching T5 since my rookie year, obviously, man. And he goes, he works, no matter what's going on in the outside world. Yeah, we all have stuff going on, but when he's at work, he's at work. He's a pro's pro, man. And to watch him again, you know, it's going to help my game even more, help me become that leader I need to be even more. Watching DeMario, you know, it's going to help even more, man. So I'm excited about that for sure.
Well, I know that for any player, the mental side of the game is just as important as the physical side. You've got some plays on your tape, though, from like your second season to where you're reading a play action, flowing with the play flow, understanding where your help is, all these other things. How did you get to that point at NFL speed so quickly?
Reps, man. Practice reps. Practice, you know, when you one thing I like to do, everyone would say this, but actions show otherwise. I try to treat every rep in practice like the game, you know, whether it's the speed, me getting my stance early, flying to the ball, making sure I finish, you know, to show the coaches I'll make the tackle. You know, it's something that was preached over in Kansas City. So it's kind of something that's built into me now, man, to make practice as hard as possible. You know, reps, watch film, pay attention in the film room. Even if it's little details you pick up on here and there, you won't be perfect, but if you do the little things right, like your alignment and know your assignment, you'll be making plays all over the field, man. And people think you're some kind of genius for just doing your job, you know. So that's usually how it goes.
All right, y'all, back at it. That was Willie Gay talking about signing with the Saints. A few interesting things that he brought up there, right? I think when you look at this and you say, well, why did they go his direction? Why didn't they spend more to bring Zach Bond back? Because, you know, you're paying however much to bring Willie Gay in. Why didn't you pay that much to bring Zach Bond back? Well, for one thing, one of Zach Bond's best attributes was special teams. And I am curious as to if Willie is asked to contribute on special teams. And if he does, how does he perform there? But that's something you'll figure out as you go. I did think it was interesting. You know, I mentioned a tweet and I'll flash up the tweet to my left here. He's talking about, you know, he wasn't a fan of his role. And he did elaborate on that. I asked him about that. And I do think it's interesting because, for one, and you know, I'm not calling anybody out here, he had his highest total snaps at the NFL level last season. Yeah, I think he's 641 snaps compared to like 620-something the year before. He wasn't as productive, you know, and I think that's more what he was talking about, is the way he was deployed. It's not necessarily about snap share. It's about the way he was deployed and the kind of disjointed nature of it. And I get it. I do get it. That said, my only issue is that I don't think that's going to be any different with the Saints, because assuming he does not beat out Pete Werner in camp, which is an assumption, it's not necessarily a fact. I do think that he is brought in to some extent to push Pete Werner. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, I think realistically, you're talking about Sam snaps and, you know, obviously filling in if there are any injuries or stuff like that. But you're not going to play three linebackers that much. I think you'll play more base personnel because he's versatile and because he can move around. And if you need him to track down some of these bigger wide receivers or tight ends, running backs, he can do that. But I don't think that his snap share is going to increase a ton. So I'm hopeful that this time next year, we're not having the same conversation of, well, they didn't use me the right way, right? And I think that was born out of more frustration than anything else. And I do think that you're going to see him on the field a lot, particularly in matchups against guys who want to get out and run, right? Because that was a huge issue for the Saints. And something I talked about last year a lot was, I think they are at a deficit of team speed on defense. And Zach Bond was included in that. And one of the reasons you could only get Zach Bond on the field sparingly was because if he was asked to play in coverage at all, he was getting attacked. The Saints knew that. Other teams knew that. So it was very limiting to how you could get him on the field and what you could ask him to do. And that's why Nephi Sewell, when he kind of burst onto the scene and suddenly it was like, yeah, this works better. This makes more sense. Now, Nephi's dealing with that injury and you don't know where he's going to be. But I do like Willie Gay. I think that he's going to have the right approach. And I think his situation is going to be helped by the fact that Tyrann Mathieu is here, Colin Saunders here, Tom Passion, you know, these guys who he's worked with in the past and he can kind of build up. I think one thing that happens on a team that has as much success as the Chiefs have is kind of these role players, these guys who sacrifice a lot for the team, they tend to get ignored because everyone wants to talk about Pat Mahomes and everyone wants to talk about this. You know who was the star group on that Chiefs team this year? Was the defense, was the secondary, was the coverage. But still, all we talk about is Pat Mahomes did it again. And yes, he did lead the touchdown drive in overtime and he made the comeback, whatever. The defense was the star of that team, but we never talk about it, really. We talk about Pat Mahomes. And so I get that. And I think that's why when you took a look at a guy who's talking about joining this team, and he says, yeah, the defense is always legit. Because and I've talked to Colin about this, Colin Saunders. Early in the season last year, he kind of displayed that same sentiment. He loves Pat Mahomes. He loves the offense. But every time the Chiefs would lose and they would allow like 24 points, it'd be like, oh, the defense let down Pat, you know? And it's like no one ever talks about the defense when Pat has a bad game and the defense steps up, right? So I do think that is a factor there. But either way, like I like the athleticism he brings. And if the only difference is that in games against, I don't know, what are the mobile quarterbacks they're facing next year, right? I don't know off the top of my head, but they exist. Jordan Love, you're playing the Packers again, right? If all he's able to do, if the only difference he makes is that in a game against a Jordan Love, you're able to track him down rather than allowing him to escape and extend plays the way he was in that week 3 game, you win that game, right? In the game against the Falcons in week 12, right? If you're able to track Desmond Ridder down and not allow him to extend plays, I think you probably win that game, right? The Vikings in week 10, Josh Dobbs, you know, they did nothing in the second half of that game. The first half, he was unstoppable. Why? Because he was able to extend plays and run. He had that crazy soaring touchdown. Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars, like, that was a massive issue. Even week 4 against the Bucs, I don't know if you win that game. I don't think that it was all about Baker extending plays, but it definitely made your life a lot more difficult, at least on the defensive side of the ball. Now, you can only change so much on the offensive side of the ball. You still got Derek Carr. You need him to perform. But I do think that when you look at last year and you look at the struggles that this team had in very specific aspects and what made your life a lot more difficult and made it a lot more difficult to win on the defensive side of the ball, it was the inability to track down quarterbacks. So I think that is what you're looking at when you bring in Willie. And I think it's a smart move. And, you know, I don't think this team has a lot of holes that they need to plug, like big time holes. You can say they need to improve at certain positions, and that's what the draft is for. But a rangy athletic linebacker who you can plug in and say, that's the guy with the ball, go get him, is something they needed. And I don't think Zach ever got to the point where you felt like he was that guy until you played him on the line, but that's not what you're looking to do. So I like the Willie Gay signing. I like his approach. I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. I think you take a one-year deal as a former second-round pick. You know, this is his first contract in free agency, and he took it pretty quick. So to me, that indicates a guy who is like, you know what, I don't think I was showcased in the way that I can be showcased. And because of that, I'm not getting looks in free agency. And because I played with Pat Mahomes, everyone's talking about, well, you played with Pat Mahomes, so the defense doesn't matter. You can plug any defensive player in there, and they're going to win a Super Bowl. So I think this is a year where he's going to have a lot of motivation to go out and, you know, maybe get 100 tackles or something. You know, he talked about how he finished shy of 100 tackles. You know, prove that he earned, he deserves a multi-year, you know, whatever a reasonable contract is for a 26-year-old linebacker in the NFL. Because 1 year, $5 million is not much in today's NFL. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can bring. And again, like I mentioned earlier, I said we talk about it, I didn't really talk about it. I do think that his presence is more than just saying he's going to back up Pete Werner and play Sam. I think Pete Werner's coming off of his worst pro season. Now he's only played 3. So, you know, one of those seasons had to be the worst. he was solid as a rookie and you kind of grade him on a curve for playing as a rookie. Year 2, he was incredible before I think it was an ankle injury, whatever slowed him down. And I don't know if he ever got back to that consistency. And so I think you're bringing in this guy who is going to push him. And I think it's going to keep you honest because you didn't really have that last year. Like, who was your linebacker behind? You don't have to worry about DeMario Davis. DeMario is going to push himself to heights that you've never seen before at the NFL level, at least for a 36-year-old linebacker. But there was no one really behind Pete to ever even say like his situation is even questionable. Like, he was the starter. And I don't think that's ever a situation that breeds, you know, motivation for the player beyond being self-motivated. So in that sense, I think it's a good move. And I'm looking forward to what he has to offer. But that's Willie Gay. You've met him. Now let's go from there. But who dat? I'm Jeff Nowak. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about, you know, going forward in free agency. What's next? What about some of these guys who are sitting still in the free agent market, players from the Saints that have not signed elsewhere yet? Could they still be coming back? A couple visits I want to talk about. And we'll talk about just general strategy from the Saints this offseason. Who dat? Stick around. Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. As always, subscribe. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. It really helps us out. We're trying to grow this, continue to grow this into year three. You know, we've had some fits and starts. I've had to take a lot of trips. I'm going to have to head back to Connecticut. It's a long story, but I'll try to keep the schedule from getting disrupted the way it has over the last month. We've only posted like four episodes since the turn of February, something like that. So I'm going to try to get a little more regular, especially as we get down toward the draft. We will get a mock draft here at some point, I promise. It's going to happen. Mock draft 3.0. It's been percolating, and we'll need to get back. But this segment, I want to talk about, okay, what's left to do in free agency? Like I said, there's only four signings. Xander Horvath, Adam Prentice, Willie Gay, Nathan Peterman, not exactly any show-stopping names there. And then you have a few players who were interesting, right? You got Andres Pete. The Saints allowed Andres Pete to get to free agency, which means that they're going to eat that dead cap hit when they didn't necessarily have to. And I think that's telling, because if you were really motivated to bring Andres Pete back and you could have done it before him becoming a free agent with an extension, you would have, because then you could have pushed that cap hit down the road. It doesn't mean they're not going to bring Andres Pete back, but they're not going to be able to take advantage of that cap savings this year had they extended him prior to the start of the new league year. And that could happen for a couple reasons. One, it could have been Andres saying, hey, this is the perfect time for me to reach free agency. I just had one of my healthiest seasons. I had one of my most productive seasons since, you know, the Pro Bowl years at guard, which you're pretty far removed from that. And in that season, not only did I prove I could play guard and stay healthy, I showed him I could play left tackle too. So now you have a guy who can go on the free market and say, hey, you guys need a swing tackle? What are you going to pay? And I guarantee you that there's going to be a market for Andres that is above what the Saints wanted to pay. And so it'll come down to, okay, what are the Saints willing to pay Andres Pete, and is it worth it? I think the only way he comes back is if the market doesn't develop the way he thinks it will, and I think it will. So I would be surprised if Andres comes back. And if the Saints do re-sign Andres, you knew about it now, you'll be paying him a contract, and you'll still be eating the dead cap hit from his contract, which it's already factored in. So it's not like you're going to add dead money. You know, that when they were clearing that $87 million or whatever, it was against that. So that's still there. They've already factored it in. But I do think that it is telling. Now, there are a few other guys. Now, Ike Yadam, he's visiting the Commanders this week. And I've seen a few people say, like, if the Saints let Ike Yadam go, if the Saints let Ike Yadam sign elsewhere, it's a sign that they plan to bring back Marshon Lattimore. And I really don't think it's that at all. I think it's that, and this is what I've been saying since like week five, since he filled in for Paulson Adebo in this and was incredible as a man cover corner and had all these pass breakups and was not a weak link in that defense at all. There's going to be teams that look at that and say, yeah, we need that. That's what we need in our defense. And the Saints, who paid this man on a one-year, $1 million contract last year, even if they move on from Marshon Lattimore, you're probably doing so you can start Alante Taylor on the outside. So how much are you going to be able to pay your CB3? I think that's going to be tough. If he gets a contract in the range of $5, $6 million annually, you're not keeping him. And so I think, again, you know, this could be a similar situation to Andres Pete. Like, even if the Saints do try to re-sign him, do want to re-sign him, Ike would be crazy to not at least get to the open market and see what other teams have to offer. right? So I don't think it has anything to do with a Marchand trade. I think it's just Ike has played himself into a valuable free agent, and it's at the Saints aren't going to be able to match it. So I would caution you against drawing a direct line. And that's something that drives me nuts. There isn't always an obvious direct line to be drawn from this to that. Sometimes things are disconnected, and I think that is the case here. Like, you could very much bring back Ike and keep Marshawn. You could very much trade Ike. I'm sorry. You could very much not re-sign Ike and bring someone else in, maybe draft a guy, and still trade Marshawn. So, I just don't think there's a direct line to be drawn there. That said, I do think that the Saints bringing in Avante Maddox for a free agent visit, former Eagles cornerback, slot cornerback, I think that is somewhat indicative of where the Saints view themselves at the cornerback position, and that is we do not have a tried and true slot cornerback, and we want one. You know, and so whether that's Avante, whether that's someone in the draft, whether that's another free agent, you know, a guy that I really liked was Kenny Moore. He re-signed with the Colts, and I don't think they were ever going to pay him what they would have needed to pay him. You know, there's slot corner options out there, and I just think if you were dedicated to Alante Taylor in the slot, you wouldn't be looking at slot corners. And again, that's not necessarily a sign that Marshawn's getting traded either, but if you did trade Marshawn, you 100% would need a slot corner. So I do think this is the Saints at minimum covering their bases for that eventuality. So Avante Maddox is a guy that is interesting. And I think for him, it's going to come down to do the medicals check out, because he has missed a good chunk of games over the last two seasons. He's been effective, but he hasn't been available. And so are those injuries predictive? Like we talked about with Marshawn Lattimore, you know, a lacerated spleen and a high ankle sprain, you know, these are just bad luck injuries. They're not anything that you look at and say, wow, he just can't stay healthy. With Avante, it may be a different question, but you really won't be able to get a good determination until you get him in and you let your doctors take a look at him. And so I think that's kind of where you're at with him. Now, the next guy we'll talk about, Chase Young. He's reportedly going to visit the Saints on Friday. He also visited the Panthers, left without a deal, and they have since agreed to terms on a contract with DJ Wonnum, who, you know, is probably in that same market. I don't think you're necessarily going to sign two guys in that range for in free agency at defensive end. So, you know, if no market really develops for Chase Young, I think that's the recipe for the Saints to end up with Chase Young. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the approach they've been taking in a second here. But man, if you can get Chase Young on like a one-year prove it deal, kind of like Willie Gay, right? Like, I think you're probably gonna have to pay a little bit more than the deal you gave Willie Gay, just because of the positional value, and defensive ends will typically make more than a linebacker. So maybe 1 year max $8 million, something like that, where he can kind of rebuild his value. Because I don't know if he necessarily did it with San Francisco, right? What he did last year is prove he could stay healthy. And that's not for nothing. That is important. This is a guy who has struggled with health his entire career. But I don't think that he made the impact, even though the 49ers got to the Super Bowl and he was obviously an important part of that defense getting to the Super Bowl. You can't hold that against him. I don't think he made the impact in that defense that they probably hoped he would when they gave up a third round pick to get him. Because if he did, he'd still be there. Right? What exactly is indicative of the fact that they tried to bring him back when, you know, the Saints are looking at him and the Saints aren't going to give anyone more than the minimum they could possibly get away with? So I don't know. I think you're in an interesting space there. But so again, what are the needs for this team, right? You need to do something on the offensive line. And I don't think you necessarily need to sign a starter, but you need to identify a starter. You need to have a plan for who's going to start at left tackle. You need to have depth at guard. Now, you still have James Hurst. You didn't do anything with James Hurst's contract, so he'll be around next year. Is he a starting guard? I think he is a very good replacement-level player. I think he's a very valuable guy to have as a swing tackle who can come in and play multiple positions. But I don't think he's a starting caliber anything in the NFL. I think he's a backup. And so if you're starting him at guard, that means you are starting a player that you already had a talent deficit in that position. So I would rather improve there. Maybe you draft a guy. Maybe 45 is where you go get one of the top-rated interior linemen and you try to upgrade there. Left tackle, if you don't bring Andres Pipak, that means you're really riding with Trevor Penning and you're hoping that he can do the job, unless you take someone at 14. But again, that's a rookie. You don't know what that's going to be. at least you feel a little bit about Ryan Ramczyk and the fact that he'll play next year. But again, we don't know where he's at. So you've got to do something at offensive line. And I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but I do think you're going to make a move. You're going to bring in a free agent. Slot corner, like we talked about, whether it's Avante Maddox or somebody else, yes, I do think you're bringing someone in there. And pass rusher, I think you do need to bring someone in. So those are the three next positions that I think you're going to sign somebody at. I also think you're looking at it and you're saying, we need a wide receiver. We need another body in that room, because even if you draft a guy, which I think you probably will, you need at least one more body. You have three guys under contract right now, and they're three good guys. They're three players you like. You have Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, and A.T. Perry. Three guys you like, three guys who are on pretty sweetheart contracts when you look at the wide receiver market right now. But I think you need at least one more veteran player, and a guy like Hunter Renfrow could make sense. That said, he's not going to be that contested catch guy that you probably need. So I kind of look at it and say, yeah, you probably bring in somebody else. Hunter Renfrow is a guy who knows Derek Carr. He's a guy who knows Nathan Peterman. Like when he posted his thank you note to the Raiders, it was a picture of Derek Carr, Darren Waller, and Hunter Renfrow celebrating a touchdown. So I think, you know, again, it's like, okay, does he have a market? Does he get offered a contract from somewhere else that just doesn't make sense to match? If you can get him on a vet minimum deal, there's no question you bring him in and see what happens, right? Same situation. You brought in Bryan Edwards last year, right? Like, it's just a guy, it's a body. And if he plays well enough, yeah, he gets a role. If not, move on. But I would be disappointed if they don't bring in Hunter Renfrow, if he's available and you're not paying anything significant. I think it would be foolish to not at least see how that situation develops and add another veteran body into that wide receiver room. So we'll see what happens there. But he's not going to be that block and wide receiver that you need. So we'll find out. Now, I do want to kind of hit before we go here. I know you've been on here for a while. I do want to hit. So what should we make of the Saints offseason strategy to this point? And the funny thing is, and the reason that I get a kick out of all of these salary cap conversations is that they ignore the fact that this team has actually, over the last couple of years, the Derek Carr contract notwithstanding, been pretty reasonably cautious with some of the contracts it's doled out. Now, you need a quarterback. You're not getting anywhere without a quarterback. So they tried to make it Deshaun Watson. Like they indicated pretty early on, it's like, we're going to go and find a quarterback and pay him something. And then we're going to try to build things around him and continue to try to put a team on the field that is capable of winning. Right? That's what the Saints believe in. That is always what they're going to try to do. This is never going to be a team that gives up on the idea of fielding a competitive roster, winning as many games as possible, trying to qualify for the postseason and seeing what happens from there. People talk about last season like it was a disgrace to the game of football. They went 9-8 and missed the playoffs on a tiebreaker. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. Was it terrible? Absolutely not. Was it fun? Absolutely not. Like, all of those things can be true. But the idea that they're so far off that this is not something that can be sustained is silly. It's nonsense. And you're getting told that by Falcons fans who have watched this team lose seven or more games every year since the start of 2018. What's the logic there? Right? So I think that it's funny because they get framed as a team that is irresponsible and they're kicking the can and they're not paying attention to the long-term ramifications. Oh, they're going to have They already have $60 million over the cap next year. It's like, yeah, but they had $87 million over the cap this year. So if they don't add any more to that burden, then they're $27 million ahead of where they were this year. Right? And at the end of the day, that's the plan. That's the long-term plan. It's not to tear everything down in one fell swoop. It is to chip away year after year until you get to a point where rather than nine restructures, you only have to do one or two, and you're right there. And then you have a lot of ability when you do get to the point that you feel like we're right there. We're on the cusp of being a Super Bowl contender. When you have kind of straightened out the books, then you can really take a big swing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about tearing everything down now. It's about being smart about it and being ready for when you do feel like you are a legit Super Bowl contender and you can start to push a lot of these contracts forward so you can sign a big name, so you can bring in one of these top end free agents on a, in a year where you're, where you do go into it genuinely saying Super Bowl or bust. You got to get there. And that's the difficult part, is getting there throughout this process. But again, it's a process. It is not a 1 year thing like the Chargers tried to do. And then they find themselves in this situation where they have to cut Mike Williams just to maybe sign Mike Williams. So that's where I am. And so, you know, I think Nick Underhill put out a good kind of analysis of this. And the word he used to describe it is measured. Another word I would use to describe it is calculated. You know, and maybe that's just because I play Rocket League. And whenever you do something good, there's a quick chat thing that says calculated. And sometimes people are sarcastic because you screwed up and they're like, oh, that was very calculated. Anyway, calculated, like there's a plan. There's always a plan. And when you make moves, it has to fit within that plan. And what the Saints are trying to do is they're trying to thread a needle where you, again, walk down those cap overages and and still field a competitive team, which to this point they have proven is possible. Now, how competitive can you be? That remains to be seen. But when you go 9-8 and miss the playoffs on a tiebreaker, you cannot say that this team is not competitive and capable of making the postseason. And at the end of the day, being competitive and making the postseason has to be the baseline goal for every NFL franchise. Only one team wins the Super Bowl every year. If making the playoffs is not an acceptable outcome for a season, then what's the point? Dissolve the league and say, okay, unless you're the Chiefs or the 49ers, why bother? Let's have them play a 16-game series. It's just, it's silly. So I don't know. Like, you look at this and you say, okay, are they being irresponsible? Absolutely not. They're being annoyingly responsible. They have given out four contracts. Two of them are fullbacks. One is a backup quarterback who won't make the roster. And the other is a 1 year contract for a depth linebacker. I don't think there's anything less responsible than that. And you're going to see them continue to do that, continue to bargain bin shop and add pieces where it makes sense and go from there. But that's what you have. You have a team that has shown you its hand, and they believe they have, I don't know, what's, you know, two pairs, right? You're not going to win every hand with two pairs, but you're not going to fold two pairs. It depends what those pairs are. Are they kings and aces? Then you feel pretty good about your two pairs. Are they twos and threes? Maybe not. All right. And hey, you still got the river. Maybe you score a flush, right? Like, that's where you're at. And it's a bad analogy, but I do think that's kind of where you're at with it. You're not going all in because that would be irresponsible, but you're also not tearing everything down to the studs when you feel like this is a team that can go out and win the division. And, you know, and I've seen people say this and it's true. One of the only downsides to managing the cap the way the Saints do is, and I take that back, it's not the only downside, but one of the most significant downsides to managing the cap the way the Saints do is that the owner, the team owner, has to cut checks early and cut more checks and be on the hook for more money than they probably would need to if you manage the cap the way the Bills do, right? And so as long as Gale's on board, there's no reason not to do it, right? And beyond that, it's like, yeah, okay, we're attached to veteran players, but are they veterans you don't want? Because if the answer is no, then what's the problem? Tyrann Mathieu, are you desperate to improve on Tyrann Mathieu on your roster? Are you desperate to improve on DeMario Davis on your roster? Or are you going to keep him anyway? And in that case, what are we complaining about? Right, you moved on from Michael Thomas and Jameis Winston. This didn't prevent you from doing that. You can move on from Andres Pete if you don't like Andres Pete. This didn't prevent you from doing that. Next year, if you can't play Ryan Ramczyk, this won't prevent you from doing that. So at the end of the day, that's what you have, is you have a team that is being responsible in the only way it knows how, and that is by continuing to try to field a competitive roster. And all this is to say, Chase Young, if you love Chase Young, the Saints would love to bring in Chase Young at their price. Avante Maddox, if you love Avante Maddox, the Saints would love to bring in Avante Maddox. Maybe, I don't know. But at their price, that's what I do know. And that's going to continue to be this cycle. And when you talk about an Ike Yiadom, yeah, I'm sure there is a number that they would bring back Ike Yiadom at. But that's the number they're going to bring back Ike Yiadom at. Not your number, their number. And that's responsibility and how the Saints view it. And that's going to continue to be the case, again, until you feel like you are on the cusp of a Super Bowl. And at that point, you will have hopefully balanced your books down to a level that you have another trigger to be like, no, we're going for it now. And is Derek Carr going to be the quarterback that ever gets you to that point? I don't know. Probably not. Let's be real. I mean, he's in his mid-30s, whatever. But the hilarious thing to me is everyone telling me that Kirk Cousins definitely is that guy, the 36-year-old coming off of a torn Achilles, or at least he'll be 36 by the start of next season. That's the guy. Everyone's telling me that that's a great move and that the Derek Carr move was a stupid move. The Saints should never done it. They are the same contract. Whatever you want to deal with on the back end, that is the same move. That is the same gamble. Both teams did it. So don't tell me one is different than the other. Don't tell me that Kirk Cousins is somehow a winner. People tell me, oh, he's a winner. That's why it's different, because Kirk Cousins is a winner. The dude has like a 78-70 career record. Like, yeah, Derek Carr doesn't have a great career record either, but neither does Kirk Cousins. This guy's 1-4 in the playoffs. I think Saints fans may have a skewed image of that because of the one win happened to be in the Superdome against Drew Brees in the overtime that actually, if it happened today, if it happened in 2024, the Saints would have gotten the ball and a chance to go tie the game. The Saints would have gotten the ball and a chance to win on a touchdown and maybe a two-point conversion or whatever, like how you do it. In that year, a touchdown on the first drive of overtime, won it, and it happened to be on a Kyle Rudolph push-off that you will never convince me was anything but a push-off. So don't tell me that the Kirk Cousins deal is somehow a home run contract and that the Derek Carr one is a garbage contract. The Saints were stupid to sign it. At least be consistent is what I ask from you. And I do think the Saints, at the very least, this season and last season for the most part outside of Derek Carr, have been consistent in how they're doing this and how they're walking things back in a reasonable fashion. But we'll see. All this said, maybe they go out tomorrow and drop on somebody that wasn't expecting. It can't be a massive bag, but it can be a medium sized bag, and we'll see. But all right, who dat? This is Inside Black and Gold. I am Jeff Nowak. Thanks everyone for listening. The next episode will probably be coming to you from an undisclosed location it will be a disclosed location because it'll probably be another episode from my parents' kitchen because that's where I will be. But we'll do it. We'll get it done. And we'll see what the Saints roster looks like at that point. But again, thanks everyone for listening. Follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Subscribe if you haven't yet. If you're watching this on YouTube, ring the bell at WWL Sports. We'll get ticking up closer to 10,000 subscribers. Hoping to get there prior to the draft. I think we can do it. I think we can do it, guys. But all right, who dat? Go Saints. Peace out.